Okay, so we're continuing the sugya. We're just finishing up the sugya. We're talking about the chayim. So Gemara is going to try one or two more times to see if we can conclude whether it's our balei chayim is the right or the rabbanan. So Gemara brings a proof. The labanim lama benamut be tashma ruvitz velo ravtzan. Right, when it says ruvitz, mean ruvitz tachat masao, right, and not ravtzan, one who is always down on the ground, always collapsing under its burden, right? Ruvitz velo
me. That it is collapsing, not simply standing there, it's collapsing under the burden. Tachar masa'o v'lo mifurak. It's under its burden and not unloaded. That we'll have to see. The Gemara is going to explain that cryptic statement. And tachat masa'o masu'i yechol amod bo. That's the statement that we have from Riosi Aglili in the Mishnah, which the Gemara is going to address in 1 second, which is that it has to be under a masu'i, under a load that is appropriate for the animal. If it's not appropriate for the animal, then you do not have to intervene or help out in that instance.
So if you think tzar b'lechaim is d'oraisa, so mali rovetz, mali ravtzan, mali umet. Why does it matter the position or the condition of the animal or situation? Because if tzar b'lechaim d'oraisa, again, the premise of the Gemara is that if it's mid'oraisa, you have to unload the animal, you have to deal with the animal. If it's d'rabanan, we don't worry about it. But over here, the pasuk is giving you exemptions. Right? Oh, if the animal is always collapsing under its load. But if that's the case, or the owner always overloading the animal, why should that be relevant to your obligation to unload the animal? Because your obligation stems from the fact that it's tzar balei chayim d'oraisa. So if there's tzar balei chayim, you have to deal with it, no matter what. That's the premise of the sugya. The premise of the sugya is that if it's tzar balei chayim d'oraisa, so you have to deal with it. That's it. Right, all the way through. Right, Hamani. So who's the author of this braiso? It's Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Damar tzar balei chayim d'rabanan. So that we also see in the Rabbi Yossi Aglili is of the opinion that tzar balei chayim is d'rabanan. Hachanami mistabro. That also makes sense. Diktani tachat masa'ot. Masui sheyachol lamod bo. Because he's the one, right? The one of the opinion that tachat masa'ot means, right, not just Masa'o, that he's under the burden of an overburdened animal. Tach Masa'o means it has to be a ra'ui load. That has to be a load that was appropriate, that was placed onto him in the first place. And the only way you could say that the appropriateness of the load matters towards the Tzar Balei Chayim is if you believe that Tzar Balei Chayim is Dirabanan. So now we've dealt with, so far, the Gemara has dealt with Roveitz Velo Ravtzan, and the last line in the price, which is Tachat Maso masui shachol mod bo. What we haven't dealt with so far is tachat maso velo mifurak. Right, he's under his burden, but not already unloaded. And if he's already unloaded, then it sounds like you don't have to load him back up. So manch ma'itle didle haisvar Rabbi Yosef Lili. He's the one who has that opinion that appropriate load is what determines. Shvamina umi matzi mukmal like Rabbi Yosef Lili. Can't you really set up like Rabbi Yosef Lili? Ba'atani seifa tachat maso velo mifurak. Right, under his burden, but not already unburdened or unloaded. My lo mifurak. What do you mean that he's not unburdened yet? Ilay lo mifurak klal. He's not taken off at all. Haktiv hakim takim imo. That's the obligation. That's right. If you have to, right, help him hold up or keep the load on the animal. El b'shita lo mifurak v'chinam el b'schar. Right, that you don't have to, right, unload, or that's mufurak already biskar, but you have to load it up biskar. I mean, there's a difference between poreik, which is chinam, and to'ein, which is biskar. Who has that difference? Who has that difference? It must be my shmai lady lay high sabaro the rabbonon, who differentiate between an animal that is being unloaded where you must do it for free, and an animal that you are loading up where you must or you can receive compensation for helping out. So that distinction was drawn by the Rabbanan. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, truthfully, does not even discuss this issue. So the fact that the Gemara now imposes the Shitat HaRabbanan, or Rabbi Shimon, who's really in between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and the Chachamim, on Rabbi Yossi Aglili is interesting. The Mishnah runs, where there's the Shitat HaChachamim, which is that Miforak, when you unload, is free. When you load, it's Vizchar. Rabbi Shimon comes and disagrees, and Rabbi Shimon says, afli to'on, even to load up, is also bichinam. And then you have the opinion of Rabbi Yosef Lili, which is not even addressing that issue, and says that it has to be takat maso, maso haro'oi lo. That has to be an appropriate burden on his back. So now what the Gemara did was that the sequence of the Mishnah is Rabbanan, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yosef Lili. So the Gemara automatically assumes that Rabbi Yosef Lili is going to take the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, who he is after in the Mishnah. Obviously, the answer is who says? Right, who says? Right, so that's the answer of the Gemara, exactly. So Gemara says, no, lo lam Rabbi Yosef lilihi, ubatina sarva laki rabbanu. Exactly, by tina, he holds like the rabbanan, me that meforak or lifrok, you can do bechinam, or you have to do bechinam. Litown, you can do bischar, or you have to do bischar. And the opinion of Rabbi Yosef lilihi that has to be tachat masoas, masoya ra'oilo, will be the explanation of this brisa. So we go back to the brisa. Now you have roveitz velo ratzan, right? Someone who is now collapsing under its burden, but not someone who's always either collapsing under its burden or always being overloaded by its owner. Why is that? Because tzar bal chayim is midrabanan. That's Rabbi Yosef Lili's position, right? So now roveitz velo omed tachat maso. Again, he has to be faltering. He has to be collapsing under the burden, and not simply standing there. I mean, that you don't have to unload him in a normal situation, you only have to unload him where it's a case of, Roveitz v'lo amed. Roveitz v'lo amed, that has to be that you're collapsing and not standing. Tachan maso'o v'lo mifurak, so under its burden and not already unloaded. Who's that? What is it? How do we explain that part of the brisa? We explain that part of the brisa to me, that you have to be unload for free, but you must load for compensation like the Rabbanan. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yosef Lili, which is Tacha Maso has to be Masoi Haro'oi Lo. So that's how we're going to explain this price according to Rabbi Yosef Lili. Now, next.
It can't be a shita, you can't pay schar to any mitzvah. Is there a shita like that? Across the board? Can you pay a Baal Tukeya?
No. But here there's
if it's clearly the rice, so is it normal paying for it?
Right, we have generally mitzvah lav la'anotnu, but over here it's clear that when you deal with other people's money and you're benefiting them at your expense, which is important, you're benefiting them at their expense, you're entitled to a compensation. Right, Shabbat Meida. Right, or Skar Poel. You don't get the full amount, but at least you can charge the Skar Poel that you're entitled to by Aveda, by Ti'ina, right, by other mitzvot that are calculated that way. I mean, there's certain things where you're obligated to compensate. All right, Tarabanan. Tir'eh means anywhere I can see it from. So any distance that I am, it's within my visible spectrum. Right. So now Tamar lomar ki tifga. It says ki tifga, which implies you came into contact with them. Ki tifga yachol pkiya mamash. You would think that they literally came into contact. I mean, I don't think it means that you have to bump into him, really, but you have to be proximate, right? You have to be right up against him. So how do I balance between being within eyeshot and being in contact with the animal? What is the termination of something within your visual range and also within the proximate range? One and 7.5 of a meal is about 13%, right? That 13% of a meal, right? Right, this is a ris, which is again a meal is about, the Tosafot points out, he goes our rules, a meal is about 2,000 amot, right, and a rus is again shevo mechsa, right, ros ola alpayim, right. So if you take that 7.5 times this ros, you'll end up with 2,000 amot, and 2,000 amot are a meal. So that's the 1 and 7.5. That's the distance. Now Tana, we have another brisa. Umedada imo ad parsa. That you must continue to walk with him for another parsa. Once you have, it depends what he did here. It's machlokas Rashi tells us what exactly you did here that you have to continue with him.
How much is a ris?
A ris? No, it's
less.
No, it's 1 and 7.5. 1 and 7.5. 13% of 2,000 amot.
Ah, okay.
So it'll be 260 amot. I think their day also that you walk. I mean, everything was done by foot, and you walked for long distance. Anytime you walk long distances. That wasn't considered to be
open.
Yeah, right. Was,
that was like that. But you're seeing it. Not that this is the one. You're seeing this.
But seeing and then being within range of contact. I mean, that it's not just seeing it. If you're standing up on a mountain, you see a guy on the next mountain, doesn't mean that you have to go there, right? It's not, that's what Gemara's after. The Gemara's after visual contact that's also proximate contact, right? So Tano, Mata Da Yimo Ad Parsa, that you must continue, you must do, accompany him for another Parsa. Question is, what did you do that you have to accompany him for another parsa? That you get paid for. That you're entitled to compensation for if you are melaveh him. So Rashi says, is which makes sense. I mean, from the flow of the Gemara, if you reloaded the animal, right, then it makes sense that you'd have accompany him for a parsef to ensure that the loading that you did was a proper loading.
Yeah, you unloaded it. You don't need to walk for a parsef and ensure the loading doesn't jump back up.
Exactly. So that if you're miforag, if you're unloading him, right, then what is the issue? Tosus takes issue with Rashi because then what is the chiddush of Rabbah Bar Chana? Rabbah Bar Chana says you get compensated. Now, what do we know about Pikam v'Tiina? We know that Pikas b'chinam, Tiina is b'schar. So now, if Tiina itself is b'schar, of course the levoy, right, that goes along with the Tiina would be with schar. So if that's the case, Rabbah Bar Chana is not introducing any chiddush. So because of that,
those even according to Rabbi Shimon, as Rabbi Shimon says that for a Tiina itself, you're not entitled to.
Right, so you could say that, yeah. Although it would be unlikely because here, I mean, Allah is like the Chachamim, so we might.
For a Tiina, I guess, because it's physical work.
Right.
And just walking with, they're just walking and holding on to the.
Right, the compensation might be different, that is true, but the mere fact that you will be compensated should be something that's obvious. It should be compensated.
Why should I say that the psukim are also for?
No, because that's what the default says. The default says you get compensated. Right? We need a specific pasuk to tell us by pirka that you don't get compensated.
Okay.
Right? So now Tosfos says that it must be that it's talking about pirka. Over pirka, maybe that it's talking about unloading because unloading is done bechinam. So there would be a chiddush to tell you that if you're malapa him, right, then that would be you would get compensated for. But Shaul asks, the stuff's on the ground. What are you being malapa him for? So you have to explain that the prikah here is that you didn't totally unload the animal. You unloaded the overburdening of the animal. So once you've loaded the overburdening of the animal, you walk with him to ensure that the new load is a proper load, that he's going right, that he's now able to continue and is still not overloaded. So that's the accompaniment that Tosus explains. And he says that's the chiddush of Rabbah Bar Chana, is that even though the unloading is for free, prikah is for free, that does not extend to the levoy that comes along with the prikah. Okay, Mishnah. This is a great sugya. Aveda to, right? This is the almost anti-daf yomi sugya coming up. Alright, aveda to, aveda taviv. Right, so if it's between your aveda and the aveda of your father, aveda to kodemet. Your aveda comes first. Alright, because again, generally we have a belief that you don't have to take a loss to provide kibud aveim. Kibud aveim has to be done out of your parents' money out of their pockets, not out of your pocket necessarily.
And it was
everything is out of their pocket. So therefore, over here, you're not obligated to give up your aveda in order to take care of their aveda.
Isn't that only if they have, if they don't have?
Well, that made a difference that you have to get them out of aniyim. It's not because of kibud aveim. It has to do with that aniyim mishpacha come first, meaning that there's an obligation to provide staka. All right, aveda tov, aveda trabo, shelo kodem. To yours and your Rebbe, again, Shalom Kodem. Now, Avedat Aviv, Avedat Rabbo. Choose between the father and the Rebbe, Shalom Kodemet. The Rebbe goes first, Shaviv, Hevio, Leolam Azeh. Rabbo, Shalom Dochachma, Mevio, Lechelam Abba. Again, the Aviv, right, only provided him and brought him to this world, the Rebbe brings him to the Olam Abba. Vim Aviv, if his father is also a Chacham, because then his father has both aspects, which is both the Olam Hazeh and the Olam Haba. Hayaviv v'rabo nusim masui. They both were loaded up, and he has to unload them, he has to help unload them. Meniach shel rabo, v'achar kach meniach shel aviv. First he unloads his Rebbe, and then you unload your father. Hayaviv v'rabo v'beit ha-shevi. Again, they're in captivity. Bodet rabo, v'achar kach bodet aviv. Again, you redeem your Rebbe, and then you redeem your father. All of these are for the same reason, which is Rabbi Mevi told the Olam Haba, and his Aviv only brought him into Olam Hazeh.
Can we assume that the mission statement, Vim Aviv Chacham, applies to the other ones also?
Right now. Vim Aviv Chacham, Bodet Aviv, Achar Kach, Bodet Rabo.
So if it didn't say, by Masai.
I would say the same thing, yeah. That if his father is a Chacham, which means his father qualifies under both conditions of Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, then obviously he takes precedence over his Rebbe. Now, how do we know that this is true? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, so we saw this statement earlier. Amar Kora, the Pasuk says, Eves ki lo yevecha evyon. So as long as there should not be within you a poor person. What does that mean? Shalcha kodem l'shol kol adam. That you take precedence before anyone else. I mean, there's no obligation for you to put yourself into a position of poverty in order to help others. Right? That's a principle that we have all the time with giving tzedakah. A person doesn't give beyond their means because we're not trying to help others at your expense. We're not trying to solve the problem on you and somewhere else, create another anipo. So that's the Kevis Kleo Bechayav Yom, that you shouldn't create a position of Yom within yourself in order to protect others. Now, the principle, and I mentioned this when we learned it before, and the Gemara quoted this earlier, the problem with this Pasuk is that since there is no objective standard beyond which Shalchat Kodem versus the other person, the statement here basically says that you're always first. I mean, that if it comes between you and someone else, and you can make more money, then you should always give precedence to yourself. That was the way the principle was used earlier in the Gemara. Over here it says that you shouldn't go into poverty in order to help others, but the Gemara extended that position, Shalchat Kodem Eshkol Kol Adam, right? That is, yours goes before anyone else, and right, that applies even a broader sense, that you always take precedence over other people. If you take that to its ultimate limit, that means that people will never do chesed or tzedakah. Because if I'm always measuring between myself and someone else, and I give precedence to myself, it's very rarely that I want to give to others or do for others, because I can always say I can make more money, I can do more, I can do better for myself, why should I go and do others? So that brings the next statement of the Gemara. I'm going to hear the Marav, call Mekayim b'matzmo, kach sof b'kach, sof b'adidei kach. Anybody who keeps this position to the letter of the law will end up going to that position. So that means that someone who always puts Shalchat Kodem, then instead of really protecting himself from becoming an Avyon, he'll end up being an Avyon that way also. So Rabbi Yehuda Marav suggests that there's two sides straight to the coin here. That we don't allow you to expend beyond your means so that you become an Avyon. And the other side is that we don't allow you to never take care of others, because then you also become an Avyon. That's what Rabbi Yehuda Marav says, that if you always give precedence to yourself, then you will become an Avyon anyway. So what Rabbi Yehuda Marav are explaining or understanding is that there's a balance, right? That Shalchat Kodem in certain instances, and in other instances you have to give tzedakah v'chesed. You have to find the balance between providing for oneself and ensuring that others are provided for. And that's, I think, these two statements of Rabbi Yehuda Marav.
Even the puzzle seems to imply that. I mean, when you say Shalchat Kodem, the Shalchat Adam, the puzzle says, so in a situation where you're literally impoverishing yourself, then, you know, that's where the puzzle kicks in. But if you've got plenty and it's a matter of enriching yourself further,
I would agree with you that that's the Pashuk Shad of the Pasuk. The problem is the Gemara back on Daf Lamed, Darshan from that, Shalom Mirubam Shal Chaviro, if you're worth more than your friend, Shalchat Kodem. That's what the Gemara says. There, the Gemara, it's clear that the issue there is not that you're on the borderline and you're turning. There, it's clear that it's just more money for yourself. And the Gemara learns from this pasuk that shalcha meruba, that when it's worth more to you to continue to work and ignore his avedah, then we say to ignore his avedah and continue to work. So there, the Gemara there is clearly using that pasuk, nothing to do with avyon, but using it as a general principle that you come first. That if you can make more money, if it's more value to you, then you go first. Right? That extension of this pasuk is the problem. Not the, I agree with you, the pure shot in the pasuk is just avyon. That's a simple explanation. If you're going to become avyon, don't do it. If not, then go ahead and take care of other people. But the Gemara's extension on Daf Lamed shows that it's much more than that, that the Gemara believes. And that's where you get the second statement of the Gemara, which says that if you always give yourself precedence, then you'll be an avyon anyway. So you got to find that balance. All right, now.
The Issa in the last day is only 1/5.
Right.
You can keep 1/5 anyway.
Takanat Usha. That Louis Bazreis,
Chomesh,
right? But there, the Gemara is machlok. Where the Gemara says, "Aye Bazreis, Yotermi Chomesh," is that a cap, or is that the proper limit that one can extend beyond that? It's a question of it's an absolute cap, or someone can afford to give more than a Chomesh, and it still won't affect them. Then are they allowed to go on beyond the Chomesh, or do we say no? That's Nis Chomesh is the cap, and you can't go beyond
it. I mean, there's nowhere near impoverishment.
Right. Because someone could be wealthy enough where 2/5 means it's not meaningful in terms of impoverishment. Right. Tarabanan, Rabosh Amro, Rabosh Lamdo Chachma, Lo Rabosh Lamdo Mikra Mishnah Tibrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir means when we're talking about Rabbo here, the definition of the Mishnah, it's someone who taught him Chachma. Chachma, according to Rashi, Chachma is equivalent to what we call Gemara today. Right, but Chachma is Svarat Tamei Mishnah. To understand, right, how the Mishnayot, not simply the Girsa of the Mishnayot, or what the content of the Mishnayot, but understand the meaning behind the Mishnayot, how to explain them, whose opinion it is, how to explain or reconcile between different Mishnayot. And as Rashi says, that's what we call Gemara today. That's the Divrei Rabbi Meir. So it has nothing to do with your teachers for Tanakh, and your teachers for Mishnah, and it's the teachers for Gemara. Yehuda Meir Kosher Rov Chachmato Men. Yehuda raises the standard. The standard is Kosher Rov Chachmato Mimeno, which would be I guess what we call today Rabbo HaMuvhak, right, is Rabbo, Rebbe, who's Muvhak, gave him the majority of his Chachmah, which is a much higher standard or threshold for who's classified as a Rebbe. And Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afilo Lohir, Einav Elo Mishnah Achat, Zehu Rabbo. That don't feel like, right, it's equivalent to what we have in the Mishnah and Avot, right, that, right, even anything that he taught him, right, is enough to classify as Rebbe. So here, Rabbi Yossi is taking that the position, that same position, that Rebbe is a classification for anybody who taught you Chochmah, taught you Torah. So you have three opinions from the extremes, meaning that you have Rabbi Yehuda at one extreme, which is Rabbo Shirov Chachmato, Rabbi Yossi who says anything that you're taught, and you have Rabbi Meir, who's in the middle, who is anybody, has to be Gemara, but not Mikra Mishnah. Alright, I'm a Rabba, so who's the example of someone who learned, who could taught you even one item? Go on, Rav Schora, das ben zuom at least drone. So the example of Rav Schora who taught this little din in the Mishnah and Kelim, and zuom at least drone, again, the spoon that one does to scale off the froth at the top of the pot, or like today, again, chicken soup that one takes off the fat, that he explained that Mishnah and Kelim, that was sufficient to classify him as a quote-unquote Rebbe. Shmuel karamane alei haumi rabbanan, Shmuel tor kriya, over this Rabbanan, the Aspire that explained to him this Mishnah that Tamid that says, Echad Yereda Matashech, Echad Bateach Kivain, that when one opens up the door to the Heichal, every morning they used to go in to open the door to the Heichal, there's a central door to the Heichal, and there are two Pishpishim, there are two smaller doors or areas to climb into the Heichal, they used to go in every day from the northern, side of the Heichal, the one on the southern side, nobody ever went in. That was the door for the Shekhinah, right? That was always closed. And the Tzafon, they used to go in. Now, when they went in, the Mishnah says that they used, and one, Amat HaShechi, went up to his right underarm, his armpit, and the other one went up straight. He goes in straight. So how do you explain that? So the explanation for the Mishnah Tavid that was explained by this Chacham to Shmuel was that in order to open up the first lock on the Heichal, that the lock was not outside. There was actually a little hole, and you have to stick your arm through the door and then unlock it from the inside with the key. So in order to unlock with the key on the inside, you have to reach until his underarm would be in there, and then he would unlock the key from the inside. That was the first door he unlocked. The second door that he unlocked from the side chamber into the ulam itself, that he would do kivain, he would do straight, meaning that he would just do it. He'd unlock the lock. The lock was on the outside of the door. So the first lock was on the inside of the door, so you had to reach in to unlock it. The second lock was on the outside of the door, and he would just do it straight. So that's how he explained that Mishnah Tamid to him, and Shmuel was Korea with Torah Kriya over this Chacham, who taught him this one item. Now, Tosfos asks, a general question is, first of all, you have to tear Kriya on any Adam Kasher. I mean, that there's no obligation. I mean, that here it seems to be they're tearing Kriya because they're Tamidei Chachamim. Right? The Gemara tells us that even for an Adam Kasher, you have to tear Kriya. So Rashi over here comments, it says that he tore a kriya, Rashi lo mitachet, it's not allowed to be sewn back up. So there's certain kriyot where you're allowed to be mitachin them afterwards, there's certain kriyot that have to remain afterwards, that you're not allowed to fix them after they've been done. So one of the ones that you're not allowed to fix is that kriya over a Rebbe, over the Talmud Chacham over a Rebbe. So because it's a Rebbe, lo mitachet. So they treated these kriyot like the kriyot, not of an Adam Kasher or a Talmud Chacham, but a Kriya over a Rebbe, which is Lomitache, which is not stitched back up. That's why Tosus and Rashi deal with the reason that they had, or this was a unique type of Kriya over here. Amar Uma, Ula, Tamir Chachamim Shevavel, Umdim Zev Ifnezer, that the Tamir Chachamim Shevavel stand up for each other, that they are Nohei Kavod for each other, they treat each other as Rebbeim. The Karim Zalzan, they tear Kriya one for the other. And why is that? Why do they do that? Because they all learn together. They all learn together in the central Beit Midrashim, and since Beit Midrashot, so since they are in these Batei Midrashot together, that there's always Torah that is passing between them, they're always teaching each other, so they all have a status of Rebbe, one to the other. Right, so this is the, come here, today's the last day of the Omer, right, this is the antidote to the, right, what we had in the Omer, where they know Nahagu Kavod Zelazeh. Here you see that they were Nahagu Kavod Zelazeh because they treated, instead of treating each one as being a Talmud, they treated each one as being a Rebbe to him, and therefore they were Nahagu Kavod, both in the sense that they were omeid and they were korei off each other. But the inyana veda, b'makom aviv, enan chuzrin. Right? It was a case where it was a question between the father and one of their, we'll call them tamidei chaver, meaning that they were both rebbeim and chavrutas of theirs. Then they would give to their father first, el rabo muvhak. Now that qualification, that status, like the halacha, like Rav Yehuda, is that only when it's rabo muvhak do we classify it as being significant enough to overcome or to be at a higher level than his parents. So this is a very, very interesting story. Rav Chisda asked Rav Huna. Rav Chisda is a Talmid of Rav Huna. He asked him, Talmid, b'tzarech lo rabo. A Talmid and his Rebbe needs the Talmid. My, what is the din? Amalei Chisda, Chisda, lo tzrechin alach. I don't need you, atzrichadli, you need me. Rav Huna, the Rebbe, responds to Rav Chisda, right? He thought, Rav Chisda is asking a question. Rav Huna thought that he was implying, right, that this was their relationship, that the relationship of, right, Rav Chisda to Rav Huna, Rav Chisda was suggesting that Rav Huna needed him. Rav Huna took offense to that and says, no, Rav Chisda, I don't need you, you need me. That our relationship is not like that. Adar bin Shinin ikbad adadi. They were makpid, they did not speak for 40 years afterwards because of this altercation. Lo, gabi hadadi, they did not come and see each other. Yotir Rav Chisda arbayin ta'anita mishum t'chalash datay, Rav Huna. Rav Chisda fasted 40 days because he, right, caused distress to his Rebbe Rav Huna, who thought that he was implying that that was their relationship. And Rav Huna, the Rebbe, said 40 fasts. Mishum dechashti Rav Chisda. It was choshed Rav Chisda that maybe he meant that that was their relationship, and that it was not just an independent question, irrespective of their relationship. It's a very, it's an interesting story. They both were choshed the other, but they wouldn't talk for 40 years. I mean, it says that, right, I mean, it's the human element that people, when they take when they're offended, right, that they, it takes them, even though they're worried about the other person, and they really here worried that they offended the other person, they're still not willing to take that step to reconcile between them. So here you have 40 years where they didn't reconcile. Itmar, Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Allah is Rabbi Yehuda. Allah is like Rabbi Yehuda, that is Rabbi Muvak is the only one that takes precedence over a parent. Right, Rav Acha bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Sheshes is Alachik Rav Yosi. Now, the Alachik is like Rav Yosi, that anybody, anything that you learn from them is a Rebbe. Umi Amar Rav Yochanan Hachi.
And then, you know, Mitzad Sheni, it's a Chol, it's a Kula, because your father always taught you something.
Right.
So that really means...
Right, that's right,
your
that's
father exactly. Is
seems to be, even in Bavel, like you saw before, that there's a balance between the two, which is that you can have, for different issues, you can have the status change. And then when it comes to competition with the father, where you'd be pogea before the viv, you could say the standard is Rabba Mupak, like Rabbi Yehuda. The other hand, when it comes to Korin Zalzeh, or Nogim Kavod Zalzeh, you say the standard is Rabbi Yosi, which seems to be what happened here with the Amoraim, is that they gave Kavod in the sense that anything that didn't come at the expense of someone else, that was only a devilish, and then they were willing to pass it like Rabbi Yosi. Came at the expense of the viv, then they passed it like Rabbi Yehuda.
There's no downside, there's no counter.
Right, there's no, right. Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi. Can Rabbi Yochanan really pass on the Rabbi Yehuda? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Allah is Stam Mishnah. Allah is like a Stam Mishnah, it's not. Rabbo Shalom Do Chochma. So, what does it mean? Rabbo Shalom Do Chochma. That's our Mishnah. It says Rabbo Shalom Do Chochma. So, if it's Chochma, that sounds like any knowledge, right? According to Rabbi Yehuda, you need Rov Chochma. So, where it says, my Chochma, Rov Chochmato. You have to explain Chochma in our Mishnah to mean not Chochma itself, but Rov Chochmato. Right, Tan Rabbanan. People who just learn Torah Shebichtav, who just learn Tanakh, that is midah ve'eno midah. I mean, it's good, right? It's good. It's a little good, but it's not as good as learning Mishnah and Gemara, which are much better than him. So, mikra is like the basic. If it's like, you know, the basic learning, but that's not to get excited about. Mishnah. Midav notina less schar. That is something to get excited about, learning Mishnah. And on that, you get schar, meaning that you'll really get a reward for that. Gemara, in the chag midah gudola mizu. Comes to Gemara, there's nothing greater than that. Nothing greater than Gemara. Ulolam, habirats, the Mishnah, you'll turn in a Gemara. But always run to learn Mishnah before you learn Gemara. Obviously, the Gemara's going to have to deal with that reconciliation of those two statements. So you just, if you look in Rashi, just ve'enu midah. The last two rashis are important. Ve'enu midah. She mishnah v'gemara yafim mimeno. Right. So the mishnah gemara better than Tanakh or than the Torah Shebichtav. She tulim migirsa u'mishtachim, because the Torah Shebichtav is always there. I mean, that's what. Remember when Yanai Melech wants to when he kills out ends up killing out all the chachamim. Right. When they suggest that Yanai Melech, if I kill all the chachamim, I'll tell you Torah left. Says, look, there's a Torah, the Torah is right there. There's a Torah Shebichtav. You can go and learn it again. You don't need the Chachamim. But what they should have answered is, what ma Torah Shebichtav, ma te'aleh. That's exactly what Rashi is pointing out over here, right? That the difference between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebichtav is Torah Shebichtav is always available because it's written. Nobody has to memorize it. On the other hand, Torah Baal Peh requires not only it requires Baal Peh, it requires memorization, right? And it can be forgotten. Gemara was not written, and it wasn't permitted to be written. Once things became difficult, then they began to write it down. So this condition is all before the writing of this information down.
This can't mean learning Gemara at the expense of learning the Gemara, because the fact that the Gemara won't be forgotten because it's written down, what good is it going to do you?
Right, I assume this is
the
allocation of your time should be a focus, or the major focus of your time.
Yes, that's more admission at the end.
Right. Right, that's what the Mishnah says, that you need to come ask the question, it doesn't apply today. Gemara, Kvar Parash to the Mala, Shute Lavin, Leif Lavin, Stimot Tamei HaMishnah. So understand, right, the problems of the Mishnah, Mayhem, what they are, Ukshishtang, so true to do, Yavin, the Tarets, don't understand, I explain them, Shushdem Kayamot, Uladat, Dibre Atanim, Achalukim, Bedavar, to know which Tana is arguing over here, Vene Mahamani, Poni, Hachamu. So you explain the Mishnah, say, this is the opinion of this Tana, it's not a problem. So Mikmara is the explanation of the Mishnah. Now, Rashi, or the whole press, we'll see in a second, that the whole premise of this Gemara is that Torah Shebaal Peh requires, right, Yerushalayim requires a certain amount of repetition and memorization, and without it, there's going to be a loss of Torah Shebaal Peh. And of course, today, where we have everything printed, right, that's the question that you raised, the end of the Gemara and the end of Brachot, which says, Sinai Bokerim Adah Adif, right, the Gemara there, Sinai Kol Chol Tzarech Lamari Chitaya. That the Gemara says there, that Sinai is Aldif, because everybody needs the storehouse, everybody needs the grain. Without the grain, you can't do anything. But that today, right, Sinai, you have a Gemara, you can open up, right, the Sinai, the Gusa of memorization, right, is not necessarily as impactful or as necessary, because we have it written down. As opposed to their day, where without it, there was no Gemara, there was no Okir Harim, unless there was a Sinai. Today you can have Okir Harim without a Sinai, because the Sinai is the printed version of the Gemara. So Gemara says, Akim Pukasha. Amar, Gemara, Ayim Lecha Mida Gedola, Mimena, Mizu, Ahadar Amar, Lolo Amar Rat, Mishnah Yotar Min Gemara. So how do we reconcile this? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bimei Rebbe, Nishnat, Mishnah Yizu. That this Mishnah, the Nishnah Mishnah Yizu, in the time of Rebbe. Shavku Kulamo Matnitan, everybody had left the Mishnah Yot, Vazlu, Batar Gemara, and they went to learn Gemara. So therefore, Hadar Darshalu, so therefore they went back and they were Doresh, Lolo Mavirat, Mishnah Yotar Min HaGemara. But they ran into a problem. If you give precedence to Gemara and say Gemara is everything, then what everybody's going to be focused on the Gemara aspect, and there's going to be no Mishnayot anymore to reconcile, because nobody knows what the Mishnayot are anymore. So Gemara, you know, they backpedaled and they said, oh my gosh, everybody went in the direction of Gemara and they need Mishnah, so they went back and said, everybody run to do Mishnayot. Because without Mishnayot, right, there won't be any content or to be reconciling. So
I
Rashi says,
Gemara, I think it's about Batron and Sanhedrin. But if you learn Gemara, you learn all three.
That's Gemara in Kiddushin, where it says, Shlish Yom b'Mikrash, Shlishmon b'Mishnah, Shlish b'Talmud. And Gemara says, I'm having that. And the Rambeinu Tam, and Tosos over there, says that we learn with the Talmud Bavlisha called Mubul Balba, that everything's mixed into it. And that's our reason that we don't split up a shlish, 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 because the Talmud Bavli has all three of them.
So when the Gemara says Gemara, what are they referring to?
It actually says, the Gemara, like our, when you reconcile the Mishnah, like our Gemara.
It actually
says,
okay, so what was wrong when we said that they would learn Gemara, they wouldn't learn Mishnah? How could it be possible? They would learn Gemara, obviously they would also learn Mishnah.
Right, but they couldn't, that was the problem. Their Gemara, nothing was written, so they were relying on someone else to give them the Mishnayot. Right, so now, not like our Gemara that's written down as Kumbu Bulba. That was this whole idea of consolidating all the information.
It wasn't the same.
Right. It's not. Their Gemara is but it's like what our Gemara does in reconciling the Mishnayot, explaining the Mishnayot, not in what the content of our Gemara goes on sidebars all the time. Does Agadotot, has all types of other information that are not necessarily relevant to the Mishnah itself, right? That's one. Right, so now, if you look in this top Rashi, important Rashi, May Ribi Nishnetzu, Akhtani Gemara, in the Chamidag Lomizeno, Lefi, time that the Tamidim of Shemayin Hillel, right, there were three dorot that they had, Rabu Machlokot in Torah. There were many Machlokot in Torah, and Asid Kishtei Torot. Already became like two Torot. Mitoch Ol Shibud Machiot, Gzerot Shayu Gozrin Alein. Because of all the, right, the oppression caused the division, right, caused there to be that they were, the Torah was not be able to reconcile, there wasn't a single Torah Shabbat anymore. Mitoch Lachoy Yuchim Latid Leil Laveret Divrei Achukim. They can no longer reconcile all the issues. Ad Yamav Shal Rebbe. Till the time of Rebbe, Shenatan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lo Chein Beinei Antoninus. Right, because Rebbe had a good relationship with the Roman ruler of Eretz Yisrael, Antoninus, right, Melech Bomei, and once that happened, they were able, they eased all the restrictions on the Jews, and they were able to learn Torah. So then Rebbe calls the Knessia Gdola, calls everybody into Eretz Yisrael to come to learn together. Right? Ve'ad yamav lo yu mesechtot sdurot. Mesechta weren't laid out. Elo kol tamid sheshama davar mipi gadol. Amenu garsa. Anything you learned from your Rebbe or from someone else, you just repeated it. Natan simanim halacha ploni to ploni shemati mishem ploni. And they used to use, acrostics, or they used to use all types of, mnemonics to try to remember these, the information, but it wasn't in any order. There wasn't any particular order to the information. Then everybody brought what they had together. And based on that, they were able to try to reconcile all the Mishnayot, to try to figure out which makes sense. And then, Sidrua Mesechtot. Then they put an order to it. They put Divrei Nizikin Levadam. They divided up all the knowledge that people had, that in their head was just a stream of knowledge without any organization, and they put it into defined masechtot and into classifications. Nami Mishnah, and then Rabbi was satam the Mishnah, made him to shtam Mishnayot when he thought that was the halacha. That's the way the made the most sense. Then he put them as the stam Mishnah. Shenan stam kedei lekva alacha kmotam, in order to push the alacha in that direction. Pika chamru b'gmara in the chamidah gdola mizu shinu leiv letamei mishnah. So they should put their heart to the Mishnah. So once Rebbe came along, Zman Rebbe, and they were able to then bring all the chomer together, put the Mishnayot together, v'misadir the Mishnayot together. Once they had all that information together, and they put them into categories, and they had a way of laying out all the Mishnayot, so it was easier to memorize, easier to know. Then they went ahead and said, Gemara is top notch. That's what you should do. Because now we dealt with the Mishnayot. We dealt with the Mishnayot issue. Now let us go ahead and deal with the Gemara issue. What ended up happening was that everybody's kochot went to the Gemara issue, and the Mishnayot started to fall by the wayside. What's not clear from Rashi here is whether when Rebbe, and this is Machlokas again, Arishonim, what Rebbe actually did. Was Rebbe just, and if in Rashi in places, it seems that Rebbe, all he did was Mesadir Mishnayot. He laid out the Mishnayot into a logical, organized manner, but not that he necessarily wrote down the Mishnayot, and not necessarily that he was the one who actually wrote the Mishnayot in that way, but his organization and his bringing together of this Chachmah, is what you see from Rashi over here, is what Rebbe did. So it's not necessarily that they had the Mishnah written down, but it was easier now because it was in a Mesudar manner, that everybody had the same Girsah, everybody had the same Mishnayot. So because of that, it became easier to, and the Mishnayot were bountiful, or plentiful, and then they learned Gemara because that's all they need to focus on. But what happens when they did that? The Mishnayot started to be, again, then if nobody focused on the Girsah aspect, on the Mishnayot aspect, they started to fall by the wayside again, because they still needed the memorization of the Torah Shabbat Pe'at. So that's when they backpedaled and said, oh my gosh, we need them to learn Mishnayot again, because we still need the Mishnayot, we still need the Girsah in order to do this aspect of Gemara. And you see that today, it happens all the time. Right, which is that the yeshivot go through cycles, right, of where Iyun is the big focus, and then there's a cycle of Iyun, and then everybody's in Iyun, everybody knows just small pieces, and they want to learn Bikiyut, and there's a cycle back that the yeshivot follow on Bikiyut. You see this every, it's like 15 years, 20 years, the yeshiva cycle through, whether Bikiyut or Iyun takes precedence. Obviously, there's certain styles of learning that emphasize each or the other, but there is definitely this idea that people go in so iyun that they start learning, they start losing the actual breadth of Torah, and what's in the Torah. And then people go into breadth of Torah, they start to lose the iyun, they start to lose the explanation or understanding of the actual Torah. I say, my darush, what did he learn? Can the darish review the Rabbi Elai? My dechti, what does it say? Hagedami pish'am, ulebet Yaakov chatatam. Tell my nation, right, their iniquities, and bet Yaakov chatatam, right, their sins. Hagedami pish'am, elutadmi chamim. These are Tamichim Shagagot Nasot Lahem Pizdonot. Tell them, Ami is the Tamichim, tell them that when they do something wrong, they make a mistake, it becomes like a Zadon. Why? Because if they just pass up the Mishnayot, if they just know the Girsah without understanding the explanation, they're going to paskin or give the Halacha incorrectly or inappropriately. And that Shagagah will turn into a Zadon. It's classified as a Zadon because they should have known, they should have learned Gemara before they paskin. Right? Ulubei Chagog Chatatam, Eilu Amei Haaretz. They know no better. They know nothing. So then, for them, it's donot. Even the things they do intentionally, they don't have any knowledge. They're like shkagot, because they have no knowledge of it. Vayinu ditznan. This is why we have a Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Abizariyah b'talmud, shishgat talmud olezadon. So that's Mishnah on Avot. Right, be careful with your learning, because shishgat talmud, a mistake in understanding the Mishnayot, reconciling the Mishnayot of the Gemara, right, olezadon. And now we have that in other places, right, that the Gemara says that anybody who's posik mitocha Mishnah, right, you can't, you're not allowed to be posik right out of a Mishnah. It's an Amar, it's incorrect. He's mavle olam. They destroy the world if you pass one out of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah does not give explanation or understanding what the halacha is. It just lays out all the information. The information needs to be reconciled, understood, and then only then can you give a psak halacha. If you pass one straight out of the Mishnah, right, then you're mavle olam, or what the Gemara calls here, that shkagotna says donot. Darash Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eli, my nechtiv, what does it say? In the pasuk at the end of Yishayahu, Shim'u Dvar Hashem, HaCharidim El Dvaro. Right, so listen, you, they listen to Dvar Hashem, HaCharidim El Dvaro, those that tremble for His word. Right, the origins of the modern usage of the word, HaCharidim El Dvaro, those that are, right, they tremble, that are careful about His word. Elu Talmidei Chachamim, these are Talmidei Chachamim. Amru Acheichem, so the pasuk continues, Amru Acheichem, Elu Balei Mikra. These are the people who just learned Mikra. So Nechem, Elu Balei Mishnah. These are the Balei Mishnah. So why did the Balei Mishnah hate the Talmid Chachamim more? Why are they so Nechem? Because they think that they know, right, like the Balei Gemara, and they go ahead and they'll pass Kanei the Mishnah and they'll create a problem. The Balei Mikra, no. They understand that they don't know enough to pass Kanei or to know the Halacha, so they rely on the Balei Gemara. And then the Balei Mishnah think they know, and therefore, they rely on themselves instead of relying on the Gemara. So therefore, they are, right, we have Achechem and then Sonaichem. Minadechem, or the Minadechem, right, from the word Nidui. Elo Amei Aretz. These are the Amei Aretz who hate the Talmidei Chachamim. Shema Tomar Psak Svaram, right, Ubatel Sikuyam. You would think of these individuals who are not the Talmidei Chachamim that all is lost for them, right? It's nothing, there's nothing there. Tamalomar, but again, it's Vinir'eh B'Simchatchem. That you will see in the rejoicing, Shema Tomar Yisrael Yovoshu, right? Then maybe some of Yisrael will be lost. It says, Tamadomar Behem Yovoshu, that you will see that Simcha Behem means they. Who's they? Of they, Chachamim Yovoshu Yisrael Yismachu. The Jews will all celebrate, and the Goyim will be, Yovoshu will go, alright, down the drain, I guess. That's the explanation here. Alright, so now, again, just to conclude here, that the Gemara says, or puts an emphasis on the importance of Gemara meaning understanding, going into Iyun, right, that you have to spend time on the Torah, not just to fly through it, but understand it, to be able to reconcile it, to give Pesach Halacha mitocho. So Gemara Shalanu, maybe today is not sufficient. Gemara today would include that if one does it be Iyun and then understands it, Aliba de Ilchasa, that the person takes more time. That's why we try, every once in a while, to take a more depth on the Sugyot that we pass here in Daf Yomi, so that we can see them more in depth, not simply fly by them and pass by them. On the other hand, that one has to be, that has to be in a background of understanding, which is that one has to have control over the information, understand, meaning that you can only reconcile that which you know. And therefore, you have to have familiarity, at least with more than just the local sugya that you're dealing with. And that's probably what Daf Yomi helps out with. It gives one a broad perspective, a range over Gemara. But that in of itself is not sufficient, because one then must take that broad range and apply it and use it, right, to understand deeper each sugya or each part of the Gemara. Alright, next parak. Mafkid it's a chaviro beimau kelim. Someone who places with his friend beimau kelim to be watched. Vinignivu oshe abdu. They were stolen or lost, or he claims they were stolen or lost. Shileim v'lo ratzad lishavah. The shomer decides that he'd rather pay for the object rather than take a shvu'ah, which would make him patur. Right, that's the case probably done by shomer chinam here. Sheyamru shomer chinam nishba v'yotz. Right, that a shomer chinam can take a shvu'ah. Rashi says, what shvu'ah are you taking? Shvu'ah to shomrim, that he wasn't pusheyaba, that he was lashloach bayad. Right, in all those cases, he has to, well, take a shvu'ah, he can be patur. Right, v'yotze, he's out. Nimsa ganav, if the ganav is found, then mishalem tashlumi kefel, pays the kefel, or tavachu machar, mishalem tashlumi arva chamisha, the mishu mishalem, the one who paid. Who's the one who paid? The shomer. The shomer now becomes the owner over the item. Now he's the owner over the item. If they are to face the ganav, then he's paid kefel. Obviously, this is only caused by the case of Nignivu. Oshe Abdu. Abdu is obviously now kefil by Abdu, which Tosus tries to do with over here. How does he reconcile the word Abdu here? Either some people take out the Girsa, Or the other way to explain it is to explain that that was the claim of Abdu, or they thought it was Abdu, but it was really Nigdavu. Right? Ways to get around it. Alright, so Mishalem, Lamish Pikadon Etzlo. Who do you pay for? You pay it to the one who has the Pikadon now. Who has the Pikadon now? The Shomer, because he paid for it. Nishba v'lo ratzel l'shalem. He takes the shvuah that he's called to himself and he doesn't pay. Nimza ganav shalem teshulmei keifo tavach machar shalem teshulmei arba chamisha. L'mi mishalem, who does he pay? The bala pikadon. He pays to the original owner. Since the shomer was called to himself through a shvuah, therefore he is what now removed from the case. And the case is only between the original owner and the ganav. We saw this in Gemara and Baba Kama. The Gemara and Baba Kama tried to say, even if the shomer chaim takes the shvuah, or if he pays, are you still a party to the situation over here? Right? The Gemara and Baba Kama was discussing whether Shomer Chanam takes the Shvuah is allowed to then go to the Ganav and deal with him. Same thing with the, after the Shomer paid for it, is the Baal allowed to interfere and go to the Ganav and ask him to right, take a Shvuah or to take do something? So that's the Gemara and Baba Kama dealt with that issue. So, what does the Mishnah say? Why does it give two examples? Right there, the Balim give over the Kefel to the Ganav because it's a lot of effort to, right? I mean, to the Shomer, give it over to the Shomer because there's a lot of effort that has to be expended here by right? Both the taking care of it originally and now to get it back. There's going to be a lot of effort to get it back. That are inanimate objects. Kelim that are inanimate objects. I would just say no. The Baal says no way. I'm not going to give up the kfeila because right, it's inanimate objects. You don't have to do anything with it. So I'm not giving up the kfeil. The reason that the Baalim are willing to acquiesce to giving in the kfeil to the shomer is because double of kelim is not worth so much money. It's a small amount of money. Right. Hey, the compensation could be not just kefil, it could be four or five times. Is he going to walk in to walk away from that name? He wouldn't give it over to him. I need both. But behemah and kelim, the din is the same, that if the shomer pays, he gets it. If he doesn't pay, then it remains with the balim. Now, Rami Bar Chama asks a question. Right, what is that? How can I, at this point in time, the Shomer is paying for something that does not exist? What do you mean paying for something that doesn't exist? There's an animal that is not found right now, it's gone, right? And you're going to pay for it, and now he wants kefil out of this. So he's going to get kefil in the future for what he's paying for today. I'm buying something that does not exist today. Right? That is only when it's something that will eventually come, that we know for certain will come. It's not here today. But there's a reason to believe that it will come in the future. Who says they're even going to find the ganav? Who says he's going to pay kefil? Right, maybe he's going to admit it, and he won't have to pay it all. So Tosus points over here. What do you mean, miyemar demikneva? That's exactly the claim of the shomer over here, that it was miknav. What do you mean, miyemar demikneva? When you're paying for it, it's already stolen. What's the question? Not miyar demigdava in the future tense, but miyar demigdava that it was already stolen, right, in the past tense. It's already demigdava, shemin avdav. Yesh lomar, the makshu savar, the shak mishikha ikna lo hafara, liknota kepo kishyavo. At the time of the shak mishikha, the time of mishikha ikna lo hafara, liknota kepo kishyavo. It's mapped to him the para itself at the time of the payment in order that he'll get it in the future. Right, so that's the kinyan here is the kinyan of para. It doesn't exist. So Amar Rava, Nasik Omar Lo, it's as if she's kignav. When it is stolen in the future, vitirtze, and you want to, with tishlamini, and you pay for me, dari parti, knula chaf me'afshav, it's fine. So the original transaction between the two of them, when he hands it to the shomer, at that time there's also an implicit agreement between them that in the future, if it is stolen and you decide to compensate for it in the future, that it belongs to you miyashav. From now, it'll belong to you because that is the kinyan. What's the problem with that? That means that the shomer should be, if you say retroactively, it becomes his from the time of the kinyan. That means that anything that belongs that happened on this behemoth from the time he was watching, it should belong to him. That means all of its, babies, all of its shearings She belonged to the Shomer, because now the Shomer was Koneh retroactively from the time that he became a Shomer. And we don't say that. Alam Atanya, Chutz Migizotel, Veladotel. And the Shomer is not entitled to Tzvizotel, Veladotel. Why would you say that? It's Alam Arab Zeira, Nasiko Merdor, Chutz Migizotel, Veladotel. That's part of the condition. Right? Part of the condition is when I give all this implicit, right, conditions, we can make anything implicit. What's implicit? Implicit is that in the future, if you pay for it, you get the kinyan retroactively, but you only get the kinyan on the core behemah retroactively. You don't get it on anything that is produced by the behemah. So my paschal, how could you make that? Again, how could you invent what is implicit and what is not implicit over here? It says, Stam of the Milsa, Shavcha the Atma Alma of an Inish the Miknei. Right? Some Shavcha that comes by itself, people give over. Shavcha the Mikufa, of an Inish the Miknei. Right? Shavcha that comes from the Kuf itself, that they don't do. So, I mean, if there's an external factor that's generated the appreciation, that they give up. But if it's the animal itself is producing the Shavcha, that they're not going to give up. Right? That comes from the Kuf of the animal itself, that they're not willing to walk away from. So from that logical effort, that explains us what the implicit agreement between them is. Implicit agreement is that you will get a kinyan mafrei on this animal, meaning that if it goes up in value, or there's going to be kefil, that you can keep, because that comes from an external factor. The animal, what it produces itself, that belongs to me, because I'm not going to give that up. Because that's something that's right here and present, that's going to come almost for certain, and that I'm not going to give up to you. Now, Ikadam, right? That Rava just said it straight out. Amarava nasik omelo, lishu kitignav, right? When it is stolen, mitirze. Not miachshav, not from retroactively, but right before the gneivah, it'll belong to you. So my denial, what's the difference between these two opinions? One of them is the issue of Rabbi Zera. According to the first way Rabbi read, there's a problem with Rabbi Zera. According to the second way Rabbi reads, there is no problem with Rabbi Zera, because the kinyan only happens a moment before the gneivah. So therefore, the gizotel and lalotel, of course, belong to the original balim, because the shomer only gets the kinyan right before it's stolen. Inami the kaimu ba'agmo. The next problem, ba'agam. Problem is, where is the kinyan, according to Rabba, in the second lashon of Rabba? Where's the kinyan here? You can't, if you're not using the original kinyan, that means that you have to have a kinyan right now, right before the gneiva. That only works if it's stolen from his chatzer. If it's stolen from his chatzer, then his chatzer can be konelo, right, for him, because the chatzer is allowed to be kone for another person. But if it's out in the agam, if it's in a area where he has no shaykhut on it, right, then there's no kinyan hakshav. And you can't reference back to the original kinyan, because that doesn't work. We know from the Gemara that if you make a kinyan today, to be konah in the future, it does not work. Right? You have to have a kinyan, it has to work miachshav and in the future. So it only works if it's retroactive to that point in time. But a kinyan cannot be affected today for it only to be, right, chal later on at time, because then later on time it better be in your possession in order for the kinyan to be chal. So here, if it's in the agam, the kinyan won't be chal, right? Because there is no kinyan here. So now, Rashi says, "Lishna Batra, lo akani kfeila, that's some of the name of Talai Tabachetero, it's not a chatzer, shete chatzere konelo. U meshicha hau shaita lo habi. There is no meshicha at that time. Makhnevim, domar, tikne lo meshicha, mishona shimashka. Why can't he use the original meshicha between them? He says, Amrina mctubot, omer lachavero mashuk parazu, lo tikne laha, halacha shloshim lo, lo kana. Doesn't work. Right, when you have an early kinyan, you try to make that kinyan work in the future, that does not work. So now,
I don't understand why Rabbi said the lesson in the second lesson like that. Why didn't he just make it easier to say it the way
Rabbi Zera
said it? Because
Rabbi Zera is a very difficult situation. Rabbi Zera,
meaning
that you're making a partial kinyan. At the moment you do it, all this is implicit in our kinyan. That I keep this, you keep that.
No,
and that's a very big
statement. He said that the Chachamim established that.
But that's not what Rabbi Zera said. Rabbi Zera says that's an implicit kinyan. We don't say the Chachamim established. He's saying not
no,
that
that's part of the religion of the Shomer. Right?
But that's not that they established that. He says that is the understanding of a Shomer. Right? That's why the Gemara says, my Paschal. I mean, if the Chachamim were imposed it, then you wouldn't say my Paschal. Why do you have to come with a logical argument for it? You say that's what Chachamim explained.
He's saying that Rabbi Zera is actually saying that that's what people think.
That's right. That is the relationship that is established with the Shomer. Mm-hmm. So if you say that, it's difficult for Rabbi to explain it that way. So back to the second lesson, Rabbi doesn't deal with it. But when he does the second lashon avoids Rabbi Zera, he runs into the other problem, is that then you actually need a kinyan right before the gneiva. And that means he has to be in a position to get the kinyan. Tosa says, why doesn't he just say, we have this type of kinyanim in Kiddushin, me'achshav u'lachar yom yom. That you have a kinyan that starts from today and only ends later on. So you can say me'achshav v'gnuvalach. I mean, like, from now, right?
Can you tell a specific date if it's all in the future?
Yeah, even if it's unlimited in the future, right? You can say me'achshav until the time that it's stolen. That would let you use the original kinyan, right, and still have the kinyan bichal later on. So it says that maybe that only works by kiddushin. It says maybe kiddushin's alimale, And then only that type of condition or a situation only works then peak to Kiddushin, and you can't use it over here. So he says, that's why over here the Gemara says it has to be some of the Gnei Bata, and therefore you need something that will work as a Kinyan right then at the time of the Gnei Bata. All right, so we'll stop over there.
Shukur.